This is Talking Business. I'm joined now by Wayne Lasky, who's the founder and managing director of MaxCap Group, which is a lender on commercial real estate, basically apartments. Is that right?
Exactly right.
Yeah. Now, there's so much to talk about with regard to that business, but I just want to know a bit about your own background. You started MaxCap 2007. What did you do before that?
So prior to that, many and varied activities. Always been involved in property from a family background, but principally established a venture capital fund with RMIT Uni's Aerospace Engineering Division, as well as a few interesting side shows like establishing a national golf competition, which we sold to the PGA of Australia many years ago.
Oh, there you go. So MaxCap 2007, obviously, just as the GFC was getting going.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Was that a good time or a bad time to start a lending business?
Yeah, many people thought we were nuts because debt clearly wasn't valued, and we saw what transpired as a side effect to that. But our view was we'd seen the degradation of lending standards leading up to the GFC, where many banks but also non-bank providers were in the market, and they were offering lending on what we felt were perhaps less than satisfactory terms.
Like what do you mean?
So gearing ratios were too high, not enough equity in assets or in projects specifically, and we felt there would be a correction. And it's a case of be careful what you wish for, because we were right about the direction but wrong about pretty much everything else, duration, magnitude, etc. So we certainly didn't see a GFC.
No, but you came into it with the idea of what, lower loan-to-value ratios? Is
yeah, that right? Our view was that you know, there would be a correction, that there was going to be a need for lending at what we believe to be more conservative, sustainable levels. There was a business that preceded MaxCap Group called Treasury Finance, and that business was sold in 2004 to an ASX 200 company. So having the benefit of being out of the market purely by fortune in terms of timing, you know, you have the ability to see the lending standards drop. And our view was that there would be a correction and a substantial market opportunity would present.
So what happened after the GFC was, two things occurred. First, there was an apartment boom. And secondly, banks got out of the business.
Yeah, well, I think immediately the banks got into the business in a big way.
You mean in 2009?
Yeah, to give you an indication, so pre-GFC, the banks were only 60% of the total commercial real estate debt market, and that market was about 160 billion, so that's about 100 billion of 160. The market grows 40% over sort of an 8-year period, and the bank share of market grows to 87%, or in aggregate, 185 billion, so 25 more than the totality of the market. So that leads to an oligopoly and fairly unhealthy position for the market.
Right. But then they got out, or at least they backed out.
In the last 18 months, the regulator has stepped in. You know, principally, APRA operates, you know, in a vacuum where their principal concern is the financial stability, the structural stability of the banking sector. And they're not really concerned about the health of the bank lending portfolio, which is arguably at all-time best shape with impairments and provisions at historical lows. So it's not about the quality of the portfolio, it's the quantum of the market that they have. And in the event of another crisis event that they can't see coming, are the banks overweight? And one would say at nearly 90% of market share, that's a fairly easy answer.
So tell us about how your business works, because you're not actually a balance sheet lender like the banks. You basically pass through. You take money from investors, pass it through to developers.
Yeah, that's largely accurate. So we manage both institutional and what I refer to as semi-institutional capital. So institutions, a lot of the largest superannuation funds in Australia, similar sort of groups, which we refer to as pension funds offshore, and sovereign wealth funds. For those groups, because the quantum of debt is so large, co-investment off our balance sheet is not really viable, nor is it part of the way that industry works. But for the semi-institutions, which are family office and sort of ultra-high net worth individuals, we do co-invest off balance sheet for those sort of transactions.
Oh, you do? Okay. So, and the sort of transactions you do are mostly apartments?
Historically, they have been, but that now is changing quite dramatically with this advent of the regulatory intervention. And we're starting to fund hotels, student accommodation, a lot of what we call value add. So,
you mean areas that the banks are vacating?
Yes, exactly. They're vacating more space and we're filling the gap.
So tell us about how big the apartment boom has been and what's been driving it, and to what extent is it Chinese money?
Yeah, I think we look at the fundamentals in that market, and I think from our perspective, we look at two long-term, what I call generational trends, which is population growth and the rate of urbanisation. And from a population growth story, it's quite phenomenal. You know, if you look at it, it's 400,000, nearly 400,000 new people in the country year on year. The population's nearly 25 million. The ABS, the year 2000, projected that Australia's population would hit 24 million at the year 2030. You know, and we hit that in half the time. So I think it's unquestionably strong population growth. And then as a rate of urbanisation, Australia's already the most urbanised country in the world. But we now look at the Gen Ys, who were, you know, long derided as the entitled generation, but now represent nearly 40% of the workforce. So what they want is very important to understand, and they want to be closer to the action. They want to be closer to jobs, infrastructure, entertainment, amenity. So they want it all now, and they want it at their doorstep. And so that lends itself very much to a higher density, you know, apartment style living.
And people have been talking about it being a bubble for ages, right, and predicting crash that hasn't occurred. Now, there is a landing. It is kind of softening the market. But help us understand what's actually going on.
Yeah, I think, look, if you look at the Melbourne apartment market, which is a fascinating one, over the last 5 years, we virtually haven't seen price growth. Vastly different to the Sydney market.
Price growth in Melbourne?
No, you're buying at about $10,000 to $12,000 a square metre over the course of the last 5 years in the CBD and the fringe. And that really hasn't changed much, whereas Sydney, you know,
has changed
quite dramatically. So that's largely a function of supply. So in Melbourne, there's been a lot of supply. In Sydney, there was a great shortage of supply. So pent-up demand drove price growth over the past 5 years.
I saw a chart the other day of crane counts in Sydney versus Melbourne. It's colossal in Sydney.
And it is. But we've got to understand what the base that we're coming off. So, you know, the OECD average for the number of people living in four stories or higher is mid-20%. In Melbourne, we're approaching 4% of the population. In Sydney, it's nearly three times that, at 12%. So we're a long way off the OECD average, and I'm not obviously including some major metropolitan cities, gateway cities that we'd all visited at some point in time or another, like your Londons and your Singapores and your Hong Kongs and clearly Manhattan.
Aren't they in the OECD average?
They are outliers, really, to the OECD average, so we take them out. And the average is still in the mid-20s.
So what's the average in London and places
be,
like that?
You'd be lucky if you found 4% of people living in less than four stories or higher. So, you know, I just think we're coming off a particularly low base, and it's important to understand that. Yes, there's unprecedented levels of supply in the market, and there's been so much talk in the press over the last 3 years around unprecedented level of supply equals oversupply, and I think that's slightly misguided. You have to understand the level of demand that is there to match the supply. And, you know, we settled, just to give you some context, we settled on four major towers in the Melbourne CBD late last year. That represented about 2,400 apartments, which was nearly 40% of the 2017 apartment stock. And each one of those apartment projects were fully sold. So it's hard to say that there wasn't demand for it. And in terms of the settlements, they settled in record time. So, you know, it's quite interesting. And half of those projects were sold offshore.
So there's no sign of really of the thing dropping off at all?
Not dropping off a cliff. And yes, there's been some, I would say, a softening in terms of the level of pre-sales, you know, so if you've got a new project in market now, it's taking longer to sell it. But I would say just reverting back to probably a healthier measure where there's still demand, but instead of something selling out overnight, it might take 6 months to reach the requisite pre-sales. And that's a healthy mark.
And that's, and you're really just talking about Melbourne at that point? I mean, Sydney, what about Sydney? Is there any sign of oversupply in Sydney? No.
I don't think there's a sign of oversupply, but there's certainly a softening as well. They're taking slightly longer to sell in Sydney, most projects. But what I would say to you is the flow of capital from Asia, in particular China, has definitely slowed down. Which is a measure of a multitude of factors. It's harder for them to access debt from the retail bank sector. It's harder because of the capital controls out of China to get money out of the country. So it's okay for those that have already got money in, say, Hong Kong, but much harder if you're coming from mainland, as well as an imposition of some taxes. So, you know, stamp duty changes, increasing the total cost of foreign purchases, to a measure which is starting to, you know, moderate that demand.
Great to talk to you, Wayne. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Alan.
I'll be talking to Wayne Lasky, who's the founder and managing director of MaxCap Group.